What up, Long Beach? Welcome back to your home for everything local sports and a very special edition of our weekly podcast called What Up, Long Beach. This week, we are looking back at the last 10 years of Long Beach sports, a decade full of Mike and JJ.
JJ and I started 2010s at the Long Beach Post. We then went to the Gazettes. We then added the Press Telegram. We then got laid off from the Press Telegram. We then started the 560.org. We then created a partnership with the Long Beach Post. And that's who this special episode of What Up Long Beach is brought to you by, just like all episodes of this podcast. LBPost.com, your home for Long Beach's best news coverage. The 562.org, your home for Long Beach's best sports coverage. And we are going to bring you our top 15 stories from the 2010s. I'm fired up.
Right now, if you have not been listening to this show or following anything else going on at the 562.org's partnership with Long Beach Poach, which includes a story a week for the high schools, a story a week for the colleges, kind of a notebook letting you know what the local stories are, and then our weekly show, which is a 5-minute rundown of everything local sports, video style. So we've got the video, the audio, the visual, the written word, the breakdown. We just need you to be involved with the 562.org Long Beach Post and these shows. So please subscribe if you haven't already done so to the podcast. Subscribe on the 562.org. Let your friends know that they need to subscribe as well. This stuff can be delivered to you. You don't even need to search for it. All you have to do is sign up right now at the website.
Mentioned at the top of the show that JJ and I have been covering Long Beach sports for the entire decade of the 2010s, and I just wanted to say there's one other constant. We've been at a number of different publications. The other thing that has been with us for the entire 10 years is Naples Rib Company, an unbelievable, unprecedented, completely unrivaled amount of support for local sports coverage from Dave Orsini and Naples Rib Company, our title sponsor for basically our entire adult lives.
Truth.
Go down to Naples Rib Company, celebrate Christmas, celebrate New Year's, celebrate life.
Celebrate ribs.
Celebrate La Vida with the ribs. Get your barbecue sauce, get your brisket, get everything else at Naples Rib Company. Tell them thank you so much from the bottom of your heart, from the bottom of our heart, for supporting Long Beach sports coverage.
So here it is. We've looked back at all the stories, watched every single video that we've done over the last 10 years, and we've picked 15 stories. That's how much we've covered. We couldn't do a top 10 of the last 10 years. No, no, no. That'd be too easy. We had to push it to 15.
We're still going to get beat up over this top 15. Oh, there's too much. There's not enough of this school. There's too much of this school.
Honestly, we should get beat up. You're absolutely right, because there's just too much good stuff. Tungus. When it comes to Long Beach sports. But we did whittle it down. We have got 15 stories that, to be honest with you, I think it's the best of the decade, the best of Long Beach sports over the last 10 years. But it's also, as Mitch Hedberg would say, all-encompassingly. It's got a little bit of everything. It kind of tells the story of the last 10 years. If somebody were to ask us, hey, what do you remember from the last 10 years? Basically, these 15 things would be on the list of the first 20 things that Mike and I would say. Because we could literally do a top 100. I don't think that would be that difficult, honestly.
I mean, we're missing a number of huge stories for sure, just because sports. We picked what we picked. All right, this is based on my memory, JJ's memory, yep, our research, our stats on what people were most interested in, what they looked at the most.
Yeah, we know how many people hit these stories, so we know if you care about it or not.
Yeah, so if you're bringing up your school's historic fill-in-the-blank title,
I mean,
I might hit you with some information you're not prepared to receive.
You don't want that Stadio Bossio life.
All right.
He'll come at you.
Drum roll. Number 15. Spider monkey. Number 15, and I'm going to go ahead and say this is the biggest story of the 2020s. Long Beach, in the middle of 2018, finding out that the 2028 Summer Olympics are coming to Los Angeles and coming to the city of Long Beach in a big way, with the biggest number of sports the city's ever hosted. Long Beach did previously host Olympic events in 1932 and 1984, but will be hosting 5 sports and counting in 2028, including some that we're really excited about, like water polo, men's and women's, which we have a great history of, BMX biking, which was basically invented on the hills around Long Beach State. Yep. We've got handball, mm-hmm, which you and I both love sailing, handball, and triathlon. So lots to be excited about. And they're exploring bringing rowing, and who knows, we'll see what else. Maybe we'll end up hosting everything.
Listen, it's amazing that Long Beach is involved in the Olympics, in the 2028 Olympics that are coming to Los Angeles, but almost more importantly for the city of Long Beach and the people who live here and the people who love this place, the waterfront will never look the same after the 2028 Olympics here in this city. The Olympics has a history of changing the way cities look. Doesn't matter how big the city, doesn't matter how small a city. Winter, summer, Paralympic, doesn't matter. They change the way cities look. And the way that you see the Grand Prix down there, driving down Shoreline, going out to get something to eat at the Rainbow Pier, that's all going to look completely different because of this one sporting event. I think that's amazing. I think it's magical. And if we're being really honest, I think that elephant lot needs it incredibly badly. I love Long Beach Sports Arena. Do not get me wrong. From the Ice Dogs to the very first Blink-182 show I ever saw. I love that place. Love it. But honestly,
first of many.
It needs a facelift. And what better way than to go to the land of plastic surgery, Southern California, and give this thing the facelift that it deserves. I can't wait to see what it looks like. Because we did put up a couple of the first renderings that they did. It looks like a LA Live Light. Looks, which is a compliment.
It looks pretty sick. We're fired up for it. We're excited to see what happens there. We go to our number 14 store. And I have a feeling, by the way, this will make it an appearance in next week's special episode of What Up Long Beach, where we take a look at the biggest sports stories of 2020. So definitely look for that next week.
We're going to call it 2020 Vision.
Just strap yourself in for the 2020 puns for the next 13 months.
I've been holding meetings every week for the last few years working on these 2020 puns.
Number 14, the Long Beach Poly girls basketball team's championships after championships. Not only did they win all of the league championships in the 2010s, they also won the CIF title in 2010 and 2017 and the state titles in 2013 and 14. So of the 10 years in the decade, they won a CIF or a state title in 4 years. That's pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. Do not just skip over the fact that they ran roughshod over the Moore League in the last 10 years. Like, not even close. Like, the last time it was close, Milliken was beating them.
In 2008.
Courtney Clement?
Courtney Clements.
Yeah, that's a pull, dude. That's a 2007 pull right there.
Congratulations. Very, very proud of you. Who was the second D1 player on that Milliken team behind Courtney Clements? You have no shot.
No, that's tough. That's tough. Milliken had two D1 players. That just shows how different basketball
Courtney Clements was a WNBA player, won a WNBA title.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Okay, great decade, obviously, for the Poly girls basketball
team. Hold on. Who were the best Poly girls basketball players of the last 10 years? I mean, obviously, the twins were incredible.
Yeah.
And they had their run.
LaJene Drummer, McDonald's All-American. I would say Erica Carter became the first Poly alum to make it to the WNBA. Just recently, actually. I loved her game a lot.
I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for Jazz Dixon, dude.
That's pre-decade. That's the aughts.
Wait, I thought she graduated in 2010.
Graduated, yeah, but she's... So she technically played in the first 2 months of the decade.
Gotcha!
Yes, ton of talent, obviously, we've gone through there. Our number 13 team, another team, a multiple state champion in the decade. We got to celebrate with these guys three different times. The Long Beach City College men's volleyball team winning state championships in 2012, 2016, and 2019. 2019, the most dominant state title ever. They didn't let their opponent over 12 points in the second and third set.
Crazy.
It's pretty good. And also the 2016 one they got to host. No, it was 2012 they hosted.
Yes.
That we were at and just had a blast at. That whole team was full of Moore League kids. They all ran and jumped in the pool after they won the plaque. It was an awesome, awesome night.
Those championship games at home, I have a feeling there's going to be another one on this list volleyball-wise. but those championship games at home are... I don't know, man. There's something else about them. Like when you and I first started, they were playing, I think, 4 or 5 CIF football games at Angel Stadium. Now they don't do that anymore, and a lot of the lower divisions have to play their championship games at home. When that first started, you and I were like, oh, man, that really sucks. Like, you don't want to have to play a championship game at somebody else's place.
Right.
But the ability to play a championship game at home at the place where you practice – for most of these teams, the place where you're like grinding during the summer, one day we're going to be able to play for that plaque. And then you're doing it on the place where you dreamed of doing it.
Right.
There's a connectivity there that you can only understand if you're an athlete on that team in that moment. Like we have said, watching a team raise a trophy in their own stadium changes that stadium forever. It just
special.
Does. And now the Hall of Champions is literally the Hall of Champions at LBCC.
We go to number 12. This is the only loss on this list, but it was it was a perfect day, a perfect week, perfect 2 weeks.
It was a perfect month
of the Dirtbags hosted. Dirtbags winning the Big West Championship at Blair, celebrating, finding out they got to host a regional, winning that regional at Blair, finding out they got to host a super regional, huge sellout, crazy crowd against the conference rival, came up one run short of going to the College World Series.
90 feet away.
But it was still, to me, by far one of the top 15 things. When I look back on this decade, I will never forget that feeling of how amazing it was at Blair. In that, because the Dirtbags had not been at that level.
No, it was the first time since 2004 that the Dirtbags had hosted the Super Regional Round. If you don't know much about college baseball, it's play a regular season.
It's the Elite Eight.
Win the championship.
It's the week before the week.
Yeah, the first weekend is the regionals, where you get four teams into one place. And so if you get the right to host, that's huge, because you're at your own house hosting three other teams for the weekend. And then the winner from that moves on to the Super Regional. And that's when Long Beach State took on Fullerton. And I called it in the middle of the season. I was like, this could happen.
Yeah,
Long Beach State, Cal State Fullerton, Super Regional at Bull Diamond at Blair Field. I want it. I need it. I don't care what the result is. We got it. It was incredible. It was not the result that Long Beach State wanted, but it was really a high water mark for Long Beach baseball. And Mike and I came around in a weird time for Long Beach baseball. Like, Long Beach baseball is very successful if you look at the full body of work. But if you look at the last 10 years, you've got one Super Regional and nothing else. We've had a couple really great baseball players here in the city. We'll talk about them in a minute. We've had some really great teams, but nobody's gone to win that championship. Nobody's had that moment where they're lifting that trophy, being like, we've got this. This is ours now.
I'm going to give the one that's happened, and it's youth, so not everyone might remember. The Long Beach Pony Team, maybe the most successful Long Beach program to not make it onto this list, but they definitely deserve a tip of the cap while we're talking about baseball. Multiple world champions, the Long Beach Pony baseball team, obviously a special group. But yeah, that's I think you summed that up perfectly. So let's go to number 11. Another a really interesting story. A team that had not won a CIF championship since 1948, but put it all together for a magical year, ended up hosting a state championship at Vets in front of, I'm sure, the biggest crowd that football team has ever played, in front of that St. Anthony football CIF championship team.
Yeah, the first one since 48 is 2016, and it was right when Mario Morales had finally put together the program he was trying to build for a couple years over there at St. Anthony. Because St. Anthony football was not good when you and I first started working here in the city. Just was not good.
Say that? Yeah.
Not a lot of numbers, not a lot of size, both in school size and in team size. And Mario Morales, originally from Wilson, from the local area, knew how to get kids over there and got some really good ones, like Johnny Buxa the fifth, BJ Busby. Those kids were incredible that year. They just all came together without really having much time together on the field or just knowing each other, and just created a team community environment. And the way that that group traveled, they're not a group, big group, like Mike said, the biggest crowd probably ever to see St. Anthony football was at that Vets game.
Yeah.
Well, the way that community traveled to those playoff games was so, so cool. It was like a Varsity Blues type situation where it was like small town football. When you play at places like Clark Field and Acton, California, it's really easy to feel like you're in a small town situation. And that Saints community really rallied around that team and took them to a CIF title. A CIF title, they don't have a lot over there at St. Anthony. And like I said, it was the first time since 48 that the football team had done it. So congratulations to that whole school for getting to a point where a program could be that successful. Because that school was close to closing when you and I first started working in this city. They had very low enrollment, very little athletic success, and a rededication, both with funds, but also just with passion and attention to the sports program, really helped save that school. And I don't think anybody over there would argue with that.
All right, we move on to our next moment. What is this, number 10?
This is number 10. This is where we were like, okay, we kind of have to do 15. Because we got this one and we forgot. Oh, yeah, that's right. All this other stuff happened.
Okay, this is a little bit of a cheat because we're going to combine boys and girls programs here.
But we just combined pony baseball with Dirtbags baseball. Yeah. We've been cheating already.
I think when you think about elite Moore League programs, you're definitely thinking about Wilson Water Polo. And so we're going to put in a Wilson Water Polo team where the boys won a CIF championship in 2011 And then the girls won a CIF championship in 2018. For the boys, it was their 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th CIF championship. For the girl, all since 1981, 11 of them since 94. And for the girls, it was their first one ever. This is a program that we've spent our entire 13 years covering dudes from Wilson on the Olympic program.
Yep.
Soon we may see some girls from Wilson moving up to that level as well. And just elite program all around. And that 2011 CIF championship is one for the Wilson boys team I don't think I'll ever forget. And I definitely won't ever forget a 2018 girls CIF champion.
The 2018 girls, so many kids on that team had incredible stories. The 2011 boys was really more of a school team victory than it was an individual victory, because it was against Modern Day. And not only was it against Modern Day, but it was against Modern Day team that was majority not from California, including their head coach and their entire coaching staff. Like, there was a lot of kids over there who had vowels at the end of their names, you know, a lot of vitches in the roster. And it was a public school versus private school in 2011, right when I think everybody was noticing this split between public and private. And it was also kind of the high water mark for that program. They have yet to be back to a CIF championship since then, and have yet to be back to a semifinal since then. So it was really the Jackson Kimball,
been a bit of a dry spell.
Max Irving. And also I need to mention that 2011 Wilson team was the definition of Wilson at its best. We're just going to play really great defense and turn it into offense. And then you can swim your way back to our side of the pool, and we're going to do it again.
We moved to number nine, which is, this is kind of a no-brainer as well to be on this list. But really a moment, but also kind of an era. But the Casper, you know what's interesting? It was the Fab Four, and now it's the Casper era. You know what I mean? Of Long Beach State men's basketball. That's our number nine moment. Casper leading that Long Beach State team to the NCAA tournament. JJ and Tyler hopped in a car, drove all the way across the country, north-south-wise.
Yeah,
all the way up. To go cover that NCAA tournament game. Just a special, special March that we got to spend with that team.
And because it was the last chance to dance. We put it on the cover of the Gazette that month. It was their last chance. This group, TJ Robinson, Eugene Phelps, Larry Anderson, Casper Ware, mostly local guys, came into Long Beach State as Dan Munson's first recruiting class. And he just started them as freshmen and said, these are going to be our guys for 4 years. Win or lose. And they lost a lot.
Thank God they won one.
And they lost a lot. They lost a lot on their way to that final season. They lost to Santa Barbara in the Big West Championship game twice before finally, Big West Championship, Honda Center against the Gauchos. Casper Ware drops 28 in a epic performance in front of, speaking of big crowds, that's probably the biggest basketball crowd that you and I have ever covered a game in front of that was in our general vicinity, like going and cover the NCAA tournament, obviously bigger crowds there. But yeah, that crowd, majority Long Beach also, must be said. A lot of yellow shirts in that crowd at Honda Center to see Casper carry the team. And there's one moment he hits an and one three and he's laying on the ground looking up, and Munson comes over and like picks him up, and you can see Munson hugging him, basically just saying,
thank you so much.
Really needed you to come through this night. And oh, did he ever. Casper doing work. And yeah, you're right. Now looking back on it with his success, making it to the NBA, and then obviously having a lot of success overseas, winning MVP awards in international basketball. Very impressive from the friendly guard.
A legend in Australia.
A legend in the Aussie land, yeah.
We move on to number seven. We're going to talk about the Millikan boys soccer team CIF championship, and it's at number seven.
Wait, did you skip number eight?
Oh, I did skip number eight.
Wow. And it's not an easy one to skip either, because it's got a lot of alliteration.
Number eight, Elite Eight, the Long Beach State women's soccer team making that run to the Elite Eight.
It was great.
It was great. Can't overstate.
It was wet, actually, is the first thing I think of when I think of that tournament that season. Long Beach State, Nadia Link leading the way. They win the Big West tournament in a great game at UC Irvine. They get their draw. It's at UCLA, but they don't have to play the Bruins. Magic stuff. So they go there first night. It was a Friday night. I remember I tried to cover a CIF football playoff game and also the game at Drake Stadium. That didn't go well, but that's another story.
Wasn't that the year they beat Pepperdine?
Yes, so they beat Pepperdine in the first round. Then they get sent to UCLA. Yep, because I was at a homecoming. I was at Long Beach State homecoming.
Right.
But yeah, so they go to UCLA for that second round pull, and they beat Miami on a Friday night.
So hold on, how does it work? It's the first round is just a one-on-one game, and then it goes to like a regional?
Yeah, because they don't have enough money for everybody to travel for the first one.
Right, for sure. Okay, so they beat Pepperdine, which was that the first NCAA win?
First ever, yeah. In overtime, Nadia Link.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Crazy. And then, so then they go, so it's like, great, congrats, you get to go to UCLA.
Right. But San Diego had beaten UCLA in the game before that. Long Beach State beats Miami.
You covered a football game, then you see like 5 minutes of Long Beach State beating Miami.
I was at my, I was the other way around. I went to that game, then I went to the football game. But then we had to go back because they were playing the Sweet 16
game or something. Right.
Sweet 16 against San Diego on Sunday at Drizzly Drake Stadium, pouring buckets. They don't cancel the game for whatever reasons. That's still, we could go on and talk for hours about why they didn't move that game or whatever.
Train doesn't wait for anybody, baby.
I guess. So they played this game in driving rain, just a absolute slop fest. Rose with the game-winning goal off a mistake, of course, because in a game like that, it's all about mistakes. And they get to the Elite Eight. No Long Beach soccer team, obviously, had ever reached the Elite Eight. I don't think anybody other than women's basketball has reached an Elite Eight at Long Beach State. Because once you get to Omaha, that's not even the Elite Eight, you know what I mean, for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, let's see, the women's basketball made a couple Final Fours. The men's volleyball team, obviously the tournament's only six. Same thing with men's water polo.
I'm talking about full tournaments.
Of a 64-team tournament, no. I mean, that's by far the furthest anyone's gotten in the last 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so pretty impressive from them. And also, it was just kind of a culmination of a lot of great storylines over there with that program. Mauricio Ingracia, local guy, taking LBCC to national championships, goes to Long Beach State, starts Beach FC, gets a group of kids in, just like basketball.
Yeah.
Lets them start for 4 years. That group, that 08 group, they had the great eight. They carried that program for 4 years, and it was so much fun to watch.
You know what's really interesting to me is we cover teams during the year. Like right now, we're covering high school basketball, high school soccer teams.
Yeah.
And then because we've been around for a while, we're writing a larger story about programs, and then maybe even a larger story about the school district or the city or the university. But once you get past the events and we're looking back on a decade, it's really just players. It's really just people that I remember. Like that I remember a lot of stuff really clearly about that Elite Eight run, but what I mostly remember and my connection to it is just Nadia Link. You know, like I remember all the special stuff she did. As we've talked about some of these other ones, it's the same thing. You talk about that St. Anthony football run. I remember talking to Mario Morales and Johnny Buxa about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean you kind of just end up with this like, I don't know, it's an interesting way like looking back on it. So we go to number 7, which I already spoiled. It's number 7 because the Millikan soccer team set a CIF record by scoring 7 goals in a CIF championship to win. It was 2012.
Yep.
And we're feeling a little nostalgic. Our guy Rod Pekovich just announced his retirement. He won 3 CIF championships. I think it was like 92, 2001, 2012. And you want to talk about impact.
Yeah.
You have a lot of older coaches who won championships early in their career. You have some older coaches who win them late. To individually win 3 CIF championships across 3 decades like that with the same program is pretty unbelievable.
A program you started.
Yes. You literally founded in 1988 or something, 1982. And so, yeah, he founded the program. He won 3 CIF championships. That 2012 one was special because you go into a CIF championship and there's all this jitteriness and, you know, as a writer too, because you're just like, I don't want to screw anything up. Yeah. I don't want to miss anything if I'm filming, whatever. And you're just never expecting it's going to turn into like a first place versus sixth place league laugher. And that's what it turned into.
It was very odd to watch, that's for sure, because you kept waiting for something regular to happen and it just didn't. But to your point.
So you're waiting for something regular to happen. That's great.
Just didn't. 7-2. It looked like a football score on that Warren scoreboard, but it was the other type of football. But yeah, what you're talking about, like remembering people, that's so funny you say that because the first thing I was going to say about Millikan, 2012 soccer championship was the Lab Rats.
Yep.
Tony Alcala.
You have a better connection with the backups on that team.
Shout out to Tony Alcala, a senior on that team who was not a starter. So he took it upon himself to lead the bench players to basically study film on their next opponent and become that team during training, during practice, making sure that their first group got a decent look, got a, actually not a decent look, a relative look to know what they were going to play against. Rod Petrovich said that the reason why they won that game 7-2 was because they had a great bench led by Tony, who had them ready for everything Ventura was going to throw them at that game. He said they were no surprises at all in the last two rounds to win a championship. To win a championship, Mike. They weren't surprised.
I know.
That's one hell of a bench. Shout out to the Lab Rats, bro. And also, shout out to anybody else out there listening to this podcast who's not starting on their team right now. There is a job for you to do. You can make your team better. Take the 2012 second string Milliken boys soccer team and Tony Alcala and know that you too can be the Lab Rats and maybe help your team win a championship this year.
I love it. Number six, two guys who were never Lab Rats, who were superstars from the age they were 9 or 10 years old.
Yeah. You're getting the ball.
Some of our favorite nights of all time were their junior and senior years. Wilson's Chase DeYoung, Lakewood's Shane Watson, two future MLB draft picks leading their two public schools in a league rivalry against each other at Blair Field. Totally sold out. The whole community there.
Yep.
Magical, amazing stuff.
And we just knew it was coming. You know, you knew they were going to throw their best guy against each other. They were the two best teams in the league that year. They were the two best teams in the league for basically the majority of this decade.
Yep.
And yes, and they were obviously going to go get drafted. Everyone knew that.
We were at Blair with 30 scouts.
So everybody had a scout
thousands
there.
Thousands of fans.
One of my all-time favorite video clips ever getting was the shot from behind home plate from the press box where you can see over everybody sitting in the stands. And as the first pitch came in, the whole thing lit up orange because all the scouts put up their radar guns.
Right.
And the radar gun screens are all orange. So it was like this... Like a falling star situation, but it was just up and down. I was like, what was that? It's like, oh yeah, everybody wants to know where these kids are on the radar gun because they might give them millions of dollars. Right, 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 right. We're not just at a high school baseball game anymore. We're at something else.
Yeah, it was pretty special. And I don't know. Those are among my favorite. You know, they both ended up leading their teams to the semifinals. Which were at Blair Field.
Yes.
Which was crazy.
Which was also...
We don't talk about that day. That day wasn't as fun as when they pitched against each other.
Well, because they didn't get to pitch that day.
Right.
Because they had both pitched in the quarterfinals, so they didn't get to pitch in the
and
semis.
Neither team won as a result. But
that's exactly what happened. Neither team won as a result of those guys not being able to pitch that day.
Straight up.
That is 100% true.
Which is why people don't like the CIF format for baseball, though I actually personally like it.
By the way,
it definitely stung our two schools that year.
Do you remember who won that first Wilson-Lakewood game in 2012 at Blair Field?
No.
Me neither. I had to look it up. It was 1-0 Lakewood, which is you wouldn't expect it to be 1-0 or whatever. But, of course, Chase DeYoung lost a tough luck. I just threw a complete game, and right. I'm going to lose 1-0. Chase DeYoung threw – I'm kidding. Not kidding.
Was it their senior year that
– Chase DeYoung threw a no-hitter and lost, guys. He threw a no-hitter and lost the game. It was the next year.
It was the next year?
Yeah.
It was their senior year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Threw a no-hitter and lost the game.
No hit, 10 innings.
He threw a full 9-inning game in high school, took the L. Chase DeYoung, dude. You put him on the all-time top 10 of, wait, what?
Yeah. It's pretty rough. We're going to go to number – what number are we on? Number five?
Number five.
The number five –
boy, 2011-2012, real strong for Long Beach sports.
This is 2010-2011, but yes, those years, just unbelievable. The spring of 2011, the Poly boys and girls track team doubled in the state championships in 2011. The boys team won and the girls team won. You could really say, if we want to talk about dominant programs over the state, nobody actually touches the Poly boys and girls track team. The boys won one CIF and one state title. The girls team won 7 CIF championships in Division I, and they won 5 state championships in the 2010s. So between the two of them, that's 8 CIF championships and 6 state championships.
Just the facts, man.
That's crazy.
Just the facts.
So we mentioned the 2011 year when they doubled just because that was actually our first trip to Fresno.
Uh-huh.
picked a pretty good year to go.
Yeah.
My personal favorite would probably be the girls team in 2014, that Ariana Washington, Kimber Payne senior year when they ended up, I think that team's number three all time in points scored at the state meet. But just a juggernaut team. They're so fun to cover. Even it was the weirdest thing because you knew at the beginning of the day, if half of the kids DQ, they're still going to win the state championship by 20 points.
Right.
They had that many people.
You would put that
finals.
One over when they won the state with three.
So I was going to say, then 2017, the next one and the most recent one they won on the girls' side, they win it with by 1 point with three girls. They literally win because Melissa Tanaka surged from ninth place to eighth place in the 800 to get that 1 point and break the tie with an argument against track being a team sport. Tara Davis, Tara Davis, who scored literally 30 points by herself in a hurdles race, the long jump and the triple jump, scored 30. Polly scored 30 and then got 1 point because
they were the better team.
Team.
They were the better team. Better team always wins, Mike. It's case and fact.
We go to number four.
Those road trips up to Fresno, I hate them and I love them.
It's the best way to end the
year. It's a love-hate relationship.
It's the best way to end the year. I think we're going to have a really fun one in 2020.
Well, because you're looking at it and you're like, why am I going to Fresno right now?
And then you get up there and it's always fun.
It's always fun. Well, something crazy always happens at those things too. Like even if it's not a Long Beach athlete, we've seen state records. We've seen massive favorites lose. We've seen comebacks. We've seen everything up there. It's a really good time. And, you know, shout out to the Fresno area. They know how to do their track and field, man. They got it down.
Well, yeah, that facility is unbelievable. And you mentioned it. I mean, I mentioned Tara Davis. I literally put up a highlight of Tara Davis. I was just like, no one else has good video of this
girl.
She's going to be an Olympian.
We put that one, the one girl who set the mile record or whatever.
Yes.
We put her in the video. Yeah, she's from like Harvard Westlake. I was like,
I don't care, dude.
Look
at her. She's a baller.
It's amazing.
You and Tyler, I remember, fell in love with Kalfani Muhammad that year. We're just like, look at this kid run. He's unbelievable. We got to watch Michael Norman compete. Like,
yeah.
It is the one, because you get, and because there's no divisions, it's who's the best eight or nine people in the state of California at this event.
Which is pretty good.
Line them up. I mean, it is, to me, it's my favorite high school sports event every year just because of what you said. We always get good news from Long Beach. There's always an individual champion or a team champion. And you always get to see someone where you're like, I mean, I have people hitting me up about Michael Norman about the Tokyo Olympics. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to watch that guy running when he was 16 years old.
And not only that. We do something very different. Not a lot of places just cover one city, right? Go like high school, college, local. All
right.
Most
people there are covering the state meet.
Exactly. Right. So you get people covering the state meet, so they're just covering the results or whatever. Only at the CIF Southern Section, track, masters, state, whatever, only there can we cover St. Anthony, Wilson, Pauley, and Lakewood all in the same day. And they're all competing, and they all might win championships. Like, that's the only time you get guys and girls from all the schools competing for multiple championships in one place. It's freaking amazing. We get so many great stories out of those track and field events.
Yeah, you couldn't be more right. We go to number four. Probably the weirdest event
on without question.
Here. Like, there's definitely kids listening to this podcast who don't know that this event happened.
Without question, dude. We didn't even think that we were going to be able to see basketball in the year 2011.
Right.
Not only did we get to see NBA basketball in 2011, we got to see it in the Walter Pyramid. It was the Drew League versus the Goodman League. If you remember when the NBA went on lockout, they just didn't play. But the guys who wanted to keep playing got their old friends together. Drew League, Goodman League. These are summer basketball leagues from New York and Los Angeles, where really the best of the best cut their teeth and find a way to just keep the game going. Basketball never stops. So they went Drew Goodman in the Pyramid. We're talking John Wall, Kevin Durant, James Harden.
A dangerously oversold game. Like,
dangerously oversold game.
At least 1,000 people more than there were seats.
If you could name an elite basketball player who played in 2011, they were probably at the Walter Pyramid playing this Drew Goodman game. And so me and Mike and Tyler and a couple other guys went over there and just kind of hung out in the Pyramid for what, like 4 hours?
Yeah.
Just watching these dudes live. Just Kevin Durant walking around, shooting hoops, hanging out with his friends. It was really, really surreal.
The video's right about 100,000 views.
Rightfully
higher
so.
Caliber of people than we usually get to cover, obviously. It was special. And I'm just looking at these YouTube comments. People are like, what is the Goodman League and the Drew League?
Yeah, fair enough.
But these people are watching it now.
These are just summer leagues, dude. There was no like, oh, we're bringing in our all-stars or whatever. It's like, no, this is the league I played in. I want to keep playing basketball. I'm not allowed to. So let's just go to the pyramid and have this open run. It's all good. Also, I wanted to mention, it's one of the all-time moments in Tyler Hendrickson history. We're calling that highlight video. So we wanted to make sure that it got up as quickly as possible.
Obviously. So we knew we were literally competing against ESPN.
Yes. So we got back to Mike's house as quickly as possible. We're cutting the video, and I just kind of left it loose, right? So usually we put a lot of stats and stuff like on the video as we're calling it. There wasn't really a lot of stats in this game. We're just like, here's James Harden versus Kevin Durant. Here's Kevin Durant versus James Harden. Here's John Wall. This is really cool. While we're calling it, there was one play where Kevin Durant cuts down the lane and throws down just a monster dunk. You have to keep in mind that that game started at, what, 6, 7 o'clock? So we're home at 10. I cut the video. We're probably laying this video down at like 12:30, 1 a.m., right? We're at Mike's house.
Yeah.
Mike has small children, or small child, I should say.
I had a baby at that time.
So, yes. had a small child at the time, right? Vincent.
He's a 2.5-month-old.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, he might have been younger than that. Vincent is sleeping. We get to that part of the video, and Tyler, I'm not going to say at the top of his lungs because Tyler really lets it go sometimes.
It was pretty close to the top of his lungs,
screams, "I am Thor, the God of Thunder," while the dunk is happening.
This is one of the
all-time great calls of our videos.
This is perhaps 60 seconds after I said, "I really need everyone. You don't have to be quiet. You just can't yell." And then Tyler was like, "I got it. I'll yell as loud as I can."
The face of joy from Tyler matched with the face of disappointment from Mike is like, you know those acting things where one's a happy mask and one's the sad mask? That's what it was. It was thespians on display. It was amazing. Thor, the God of Thunder. If you haven't, please go check out that Drew Goodman game and turn the volume all the way up.
We might need to throw some clips from that into this. Definitely on the show. I know they'll be fired up about that. All right, we go to number three. This might be number one in our hearts in some ways, because this was, of all of the teams we've covered and all of the runs we've covered, one of the most remarkable things we've ever seen. The Long Beach Poly 2012 football team went from 1-3, they're number three, to winning the CIF Southern Section Division I championship by beating Mission Viejo, St. John Bosco, and Mater Dei. And I'll just say this, Corona Centennial's been in the mix, but that was the last time that we saw a true upset, a true surprise in the CIF championship, and they did it in an extraordinary fashion. There was the crazy bowl game, a fog bowl game against Bosco in the semifinals. Then they get to the championship and just steamroll Mater Dei in one of the most enjoyable games that we've ever covered.
Yeah, you're not even – you said started 1-3. They started 1-3 and lost to Narbonne.
56-0.
One of the most lopsided losses in Long Beach Poly football history.
It was the biggest loss they had since 1916 when they lost 62-0 to San Diego.
Take a straw poll of the people who traveled to go to that Narbonne game. Hey, you think this team's going to go win a championship? How many do you think you would have gotten?
I have a story about that. Sammy Parker, who's a friend of ours, a great supporter of ours, and a former
football player in his right.
Former Oregon Duck All-American and Kansas City Chief who graduated from Poly. Sammy was so disgusted's not the right word. Anger's not the right word. He was so hurt by that Narbonne game that he was like emotional. And he left and he said, I literally can't watch this. It's breaking my heart that they're losing to a Narbonne 42-0, ended up being 56-0.
Yeah.
You would never have imagined in that moment. I mean, people were like trying to get Raul Lara fired on the way back to the bus.
Yes.
You would never have thought. And especially, I think that win gets more impressive the further away we get from it. Because now we see that was the last year that St. John Bosco was not in the CIF championship, JJ. Mm-hmm. They've been in the championship.
And it wasn't like Negro got there the next year. It was Negro. It was Rosen. It was all the kids from Lakewood who had transferred.
They were very good on that Bosco team.
They won the state championship the very next year.
It was unreal. And it was just, it was one of those games that you'll just never forget about.
The coaching. That's all I want to think about and talk about and reminisce about looking back on that 2012 year. Because it was the same kids. Same kids who walked off that field at Narbonne losers, walked off Angel Stadium field champions, and they changed their offensive play calling and style and look and formation every week for the playoffs. It was just a little bit different, little wrinkles, stuff that you and I would talk about for years watching high school football. Like, where's the idea? Where's the plan B? Why don't you do this? Why don't you try that? Every time we thought Pauly should try something in that week, they did it. They did it even better than we thought they could. And they did it with coaching, man. It was freaking unbelievable to watch.
I do want to throw one thing out there about that team, because the narrative around the team as they were winning was, wow, the coaching is unbelievable because this is not Pauly's most talented team.
Yeah, Brett Perez. Shout out Brett Perez, offensive line coach.
Shout out Brett Perez. Shout out Raul Lara. Shout out that whole staff. But I do want to point out, as it turned out, that is actually one of the more talented teams that have ever been in Long Beach.
NFL-wise.
You had Juju, Iman Marshall, you had Gerard Wicks, you had Jayon Brown, who's obviously turned out to be quite a name. You had four dudes who ended up being NFL guys, which, to put that in perspective, is more than some of the Moore League schools have in the history of their school. They had on one team at Pauly.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
They were good, man. Number two. Perfect that they would be at number two, because they went back-to-back, the Long Beach State men's volleyball team in 2018 and 2019, winning back-to-back NCAA championships for the first time in school history with, I would say, the best team in the history of the school. You had two different National Players of the Year on the same team for both of those, as well as another four-time All-American. All three of those guys likely to go on and be Olympians, and just a special, special moment in the history of the school and the city.
We talked about it last week when we did our best of 2019. You can check out that podcast right now, available at both websites, 562.org and Long Beach Post. But yeah, the winning at home is incredible. It's something that, you know, what, a very minute, small percentage of teams get to do. Actually win the championship on your own floor. But I think that the moment that they were down 16-19 in the fourth set at UCLA in 2018, UCLA should have won that match. They're at home. They're up in the fourth. All they need to do is score 6 points. They were 6 points away from the national championship. Long Beach State storms back, takes the fourth, takes the fifth, knocks the Bruins off, and then the immense pressure that comes from, oh, you won, that's great. Can you repeat? And not only can you repeat, but can you repeat at home? And then they did that too? Yeah. I feel like that moment from the last point of the championship game to the first point of the championship game in the Walter Pyramid was as impressive as actually winning and competing in the national championships. Because those guys, the amount of pressure is crazy. But then those guys are also like, I don't really need to come back to school. TJ DeFalco didn't need to come back to Long Beach State for his senior year. But he wanted to win another national championship. He wanted to go back-to-back. He wanted to keep playing with that special, special class. What I think will go down, and I think you agree, Mike, as the best class in Long Beach State athletics history.
They already are. Yeah, I mean, there's never been another recruiting class there that had two National Players of the Year signing on the same day, signing their NLIs. And there's, I mean, you'd struggle at any school, in any sport, at any time, to find a better third best signee of a class than Kyle Ensign.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're talking about a dude who's on the national team last summer, right after he graduated college. So, totally agree with you.
And the selflessness of all those guys too, right?
Yes.
Like the way they put their own ego and their own personal goals aside to make sure that the team was successful. Like TJ DeFalco could have actually done a lot more. You know what I mean? Individually, he could have done a lot more, but he didn't because
he
knew.
I think Kyle, too. Kyle could have gone to USC and been the dude for 4 years.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. But they knew that by coming to Long Beach State, they wouldn't have to, and their career would probably be better for it. And here they are.
Worked out okay.
Worked out great. Long Beach State volleyball school.
We go to number one, which was basically the whole summer of 2012, the London Olympics. You and I could be doing this job another 40 years, and it's not necessarily, I can't imagine anything else ever topping the 3 weeks we spent in London covering those Olympics. Long Beach athletes, we had 32 athletes and coaches who are either from Long Beach or had a tie to the city, finished with 7 gold medals, 6 silver, and 2 bronzes. If Long Beach were one of the 204 countries that were competing, Long Beach would have been tied for the 10th most gold medals and 17th highest in the medal count.
Crazy.
City of 496,000 people.
I think the first thing we have to do is thank the people who got us there, right? Yes. Simon Grieve, the Bounty Group, Aquatic Capital of America, Dan Gooch, Century Club. Like, all these people really stepped up and were like, wait, we're going to have over 30 representatives at the Olympics? We need somebody to be there for us. And we were just lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people, where they were like, you guys can be our people over there. You can represent Long Beach. So knowing that we were helping the city celebrate something so special was added on to the fact that I never thought I'd go to an Olympics.
No.
You know, I was 1 year old when my dad was leaving me with the babysitter and going to volunteer at the 84 Olympics in LA.
Right.
I thought that was the closest I was ever going to get.
For sure. My mom was carrying me around as a baby at the Long Beach Arena for volleyball action. I thought, like, cool, I have a picture of me at the Olympics as a baby. I can say I went to an Olympics. But
yeah.
No, I never thought, especially not in London, to get to go and experience another country that way together as well. I mean, there's so much stuff I remember from that trip that has nothing to do with the sports, but like our trip to Ireland for 30 hours.
Yep.
You know,
when else can you fly Aer Lingus for $99?
Just like walking around, watching the marathon, just like
Blackheath,
soaking
in just it. Blackheath, yeah, in general.
Right. The whole town we stayed in, all the viewing parties. Yeah, it was just unbelievable. We got to see Misty May close her career out with a gold medal. You got to see the women's water polo team, which is basically filled with Long Beach athletes and coaches, win a gold medal. The whole experience was just unbelievable.
It really was. Again,
we went to a USA men's basketball. We didn't even mention that. Like, we were there talking.
That
to
was actually going
to
be what
LeBron
I ended it with.
And Russ and
the
Kevin
moment,
Durant.
The moment we realized the whole thing was a little bit bigger than we were, I guess, was when we got off the plane. No, but when we walked into men's basketball practice, I guess if you want to call it that, it wasn't really practice. It was kind of just a shoot around.
It was just an open workout. Basically.
Everybody kind of shooting around, messing around. And then there were the key guys, right? So obviously LeBron's got a huge group around him. Durant's got a huge group around him. Kobe Bryant, huge group around him. Mike and I, huge Kobe Bryant fans, huge Laker fans, wanted to make sure we got at least a little bit close to the greatest of all time in what would end up being his last Olympics. So he's sitting there holding court, is the best way I can explain it. Microphones coming in from every angle. I'd say probably 30 people standing around Kobe, who's sitting in a, you know, first grade elementary chair. Just sitting there answering questions. But he's not just answering questions. He's answering each question in a different language. So somebody will just ask him a question in German, and he'll answer in German. And then somebody else will ask him a question in Spanish, and he'll answer in Spanish. They asked him, like, oh, who are your favorite players? He's like, E. Jordan, E. Bird. And so he's just going around answering these questions. And I put our microphone, which had our logo on the mic, I put it up as close as I possibly could to Kobe. It wasn't even plugged in. Just so that Mike could put a camera over my shoulder to take a picture.
Right,
Kobe Bryant
speaking
into our microphone. I turned to Mike and I was like, you know, I know we got a week and a half left here, but I feel like we got it.
I can go home.
I feel like we can go home now.
I can go home tomorrow. What a decade it was. What a ride. Thank you to everyone who's been listening and watching and reading and following along with us for that decade, or even if you just started listening to us like a month ago. Thanks for that, too. We are hoping to be around for all of the 2020s as well, but to do that, we need your support. Please go to the 562.org and click subscribe. Please support the Long Beach Post, everything they do to support us as well. And here's to the next 10, brother.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy to think that we did 15 on here, and I know people are getting on their computers right now saying, you forgot, blankety, blankety,
and
blankety.
And they're
blankety.
Right. And you
they
know
are.
What?
They are.
Some of it we probably did forget. I forgot about the pony stuff. I'll be completely honest.
We shoehorned it right in there with the dirt bags, though, baby. I'm flying on the fly.
It's
all
crazy,
good.
Man. All right. Stay tuned for next week. We've got one final special holiday podcast. We'll be taking a look ahead at what we think the top stories of 2020 will be.